So again, in this session, we'll move back to the compassion wing of the practice in terms of the four immeasurables. So just to recap, the two that we've covered so far, the first was loving-kindness, maitri or metta in Pali and Sanskrit. Loving-kindness, of course, was the wish for ourselves and others to have happiness in its causes. Compassion we looked at yesterday, in Sanskrit and Pali, karuna. And compassion is the wish for ourselves and others to be free of suffering and its causes. And so what I'd like to do today is to have a look at the last two of the four immeasurables.
The third one being empathetic joy.
In Sanskrit and Pali, that is mudita. And empathetic joy is basically a rejoicing in our own and others' virtues and good fortune. And this is something I think very important, particularly in our modern society. As I already mentioned, in our modern society, we tend to have so much of a focus on the negative. And not only do we tend to focus mostly on the negative side of things, but we tend to focus on the negative with that cognitive fusion. We identify ourselves and others with our negative thoughts, emotions, habits and behaviours. And that creates a lot of problems. So the cognitive fusion, of course, creates a lot of problems, but also the fact that we are focusing primarily on the negative side of ourselves and others, we end up with a very biased, unbalanced view of ourselves and others. And to quote a well-known modern-day philosopher, William James, he says, what we attend to becomes our reality. So if we're always attending to negative things, then that's the reality we experience, the reality we live. And so it's always good to have a balanced view and to focus on the positive aspects as well. Even, for example, I think it was Mother Teresa once said that she would never attend an anti-war rally, but she would always attend a peace rally. So it's always best to focus on the positive opposites rather than always on the negative, even if it's anti-war, anti-this, anti-that, because this is what we are focusing on. And so I think it's very important, this quality of empathetic joy in our modern world, is to really focus on that, on with ourselves and others, to rejoice in ourselves and others' virtues and good fortune, to really have a balanced view of ourselves and others. Also, this is a very good antidote to jealousy, because normally when we see other people end up with some good result or good things, rather than rejoicing in that, we tend to become jealous of them. So it's also a very effective antidote to jealousy. So just to briefly talk a little bit more about this practice of empathetic joy, I'll read a little bit from Alan Wallace again. Maybe we can switch on the light. Thanks. So this is on page 57. He says the following. When you enter a long meditation retreat, you may first experience a sense of relief to be away from the normal way of life with all its demands and concerns. But after this honeymoon phase of the retreat is over, the hard work of training the mind begins. The lifestyle itself while in retreat can be quite a challenge. While living in society, you can easily take your mind off your mind by losing yourself in work, entertainment, conversation and many other kinds of busyness. But in the simple, uncluttered lifestyle of a contemplative, You are removed from external sources of distraction, and the physical and mental reactions to this can be intense. We are addicted to pleasurable stimuli, and when we devote ourselves many hours each day in shamatha training, with few distractions between sessions, we begin to have withdrawal symptoms. The mind oscillates between boredom and restlessness, and at times it may descend into depression and self-doubt. At such times, we tend to fixate on ideas and memories that reinforce such gloom and doom. So it's important to lift ourselves out of these emotional sinkholes by reflecting on other aspects of reality that inspire us. One such practice is the meditative cultivation of empathetic joy. In the practice of loving kindness and compassion, we cultivate a yearning that others may find happiness and its causes and be free of suffering and its causes. The cultivation of the empathetic joy involves attending closely to something that is already a reality, the joys, successes and virtues of yourself and others. Empathy is feeling with others, and in this practice we focus not on their sorrows and difficulties, but on their happiness and triumphs. The practice is a direct antidote to feelings of depression, anxiety and hopelessness that may arise in the course of intensive, sustained meditation or simply in the course of daily living. And we're going to do a practice on empathetic joy tomorrow morning. And also, I'd like to introduce this a little bit in the evening sessions as well. So we'll talk more about that later, how to do that. But now I'd like to look at the practice of empathetic joy, and then we're going to do a practice on equanimity. This is the fourth of the four immeasurables. So equanimity, or in Sanskrit and Pali, upeksha, is a mind of impartiality towards others. Now we have a very biased attitude towards others in general. And often we tend to categorize people depending on how they affect us. So very often in many situations, we have quite a narrow perspective of that situation, simply of how is this situation affecting me? And so if we have this perspective, then we tend to categorize people simply based on how they're affecting us, me and my happiness. So for those people who seem to support me and my happiness, we label as a friend. Those people who don't seem to affect me and my happiness in any way, stranger. Those people who seem to interfere with me and my happiness and maybe even try to cause me harm, we label the so-called enemy. So we tend to categorize people into these three groups simply from the perspective of how they're affecting us. Once we've done that, then we have very biased attitude. Because to the group that we've labeled friend, simply because they seem to be the source of our happiness or support our happiness, we have a lot of attachment to those people. To the people who we've labeled stranger, simply because they don't seem to be affecting us in any way, we often have a lot of apathy and indifference. Couldn't care less what happens to them. And then to the group that we've labeled the so-called enemy because they seem to be interfering with me and my happiness, then we often end up with a lot of hostility, aversion, anger, hatred toward them. So we have often attachment to friends, apathy to strangers, hostility, anger and hatred to the difficult people. So equanimity is about overcoming those biased attitudes. And equanimity is about having a sense of closeness to everyone. And one way we can do this is to understand that we're all in the same situation. We're all struggling to be happy, to be free of suffering. We're all in the same boat. We're all equal in this regard. And through this sort of line of thinking, then reflection, then we can really develop a sense of closeness to everyone instead of having the attachment to friends, apathy to strangers, hostility, anger and hatred to the difficult people. So this is what equanimity is all about. And by cultivating equanimity, having this equal attitude towards others, then we can really develop this empathetic joy, compassion, loving kindness evenly towards all living beings. So really this is a basis for cultivating the other three qualities in a boundless way and not having some restriction on them. So again, to briefly talk about the practice of equanimity, we'll look here and then we'll do the meditation. So this is on page 69. Just very short, one paragraph. The cultivation of equanimity serves as an antidote to two of the primary afflictions of mind, attachment and aversion. Attachment includes clinging to the serenity of shamatha, and aversion can arise by regarding all distractions to your practice, including other people, as disagreeable obstacles to your well-being. The essence of equanimity is impartiality. It is equanimity that allows loving kindness, compassion, and empathetic joy to expand boundlessly. Normally these qualities are mixed with attachment, but we grow beyond the mental affliction of attachment as we realize that every sentient being is equally worthy of finding happiness and freedom from suffering. So that's what we're going to do now. We're going to do a short meditation on equanimity, cultivating this quality of this impartial attitude towards others. And then after the meditation, I want to speak a little bit more about the Four Immeasurables in general. Okay, but first the meditation. As an act of loving kindness for yourself, allow your awareness to descend into the body, becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. Using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. And relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. with each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen. And simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Equanimity is the mind of impartiality towards others, not having attachment to our friends, apathy to strangers, or hostility, anger, or hatred towards difficult people. It's equanimity that allows loving kindness and compassion to expand out boundlessly. Normally these qualities are mixed with attachment, but we grow beyond attachment as we realize that every living being is equally worthy of finding happiness and freedom from suffering. First, bring to mind a person who you know well, but who's neither a friend nor someone you dislike. And picture them very clearly in front of you. This person is just like yourself in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. Now shift your perspective and view the world through their eyes, being this person from the inside. And then from this perspective, look back at yourself. Their yearning for happiness and freedom from suffering is identical to your own. And even though they're not close to you, their happiness is no less significant than the happiness of a loved one. Next, bring to mind a person who you feel is crucial to your well-being, a person for whom you have both affection and attachment. And again, picture them very clearly in front of you. And again, shift your perspective and view the world through their eyes, being this person from the inside. They are just like you in having qualities and faults. And they have their own hopes, fears, and desires. Now shift back to your own perspective and view this person from the outside. This person is not the true source of your happiness. This can only come from within your own mind. Next, bring to mind a person who you dislike, someone who's very difficult. And again, picture them very clearly in front of you. Again, shift your perspective and view the person from the inside, viewing the world through their eyes, experiencing their own hopes and fears. They are just like yourself in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. And again, shift your perspective back to yourself and view this person from the outside. This person is not the true source of your anxiety or distress. This can only come from within your own mind. And realize that there is nothing inherent in the stranger, the loved one, or the disagreeable person that makes them that way. Circumstances change, and they can easily move from one category to another. A friend can become someone who we dislike. A stranger can become a friend. And even someone who we dislike can become a friend. Shifting circumstances bring us together and cause us to part. And recognize that everyone is fundamentally like yourself in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. And then arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if everyone had equanimity, free of attachment to friends, apathy to strangers, and hostility, anger, and hatred towards difficult people. And then release all appearances and simply allow the mind to come to rest. Simply resting in awareness itself. Simply be aware of being aware. What I'd like to do now, briefly, is have a look at these four immeasurables in terms of what's called the near enemy. Each one of these four immeasurables has something which sort of looks like it, but actually is opposite. That's what's called near enemy. The near enemy is something that sort of looks like that thing, but actually it's diametrically opposite. And we've already seen that a little bit in some of them. And fortunately, of course, with each of these near enemies, we need to be able to distinguish it from the immeasurable, and then we need to try to reduce and eliminate that as much as possible, because it's polluting that quality. Fortunately, each of the four immeasurables can work together to overcome that near enemy. And we'll have a look at how we can do that. So the first of the four immeasurables, of course, is loving kindness. And we saw there that the near enemy, something that sort of looks like loving kindness but actually is the opposite, was attachment. So if we notice that our loving kindness is being polluted by attachment, then we need to overcome that. We need to try and eliminate that as much as possible. And here, what we've seen, of course, is equanimity is exactly that. One, equanimity is about overcoming attachment to friends, apathy to strangers, hostility, anger, and hatred towards difficult people. So if you find that your loving kindness is being polluted by attachment, then we can reflect on equanimity as an antidote. Equanimity, of course, is this unbiased, impartial attitude towards others. But also, of course, we can be equally indifferent towards everyone. So that could seem like it's equanimity, that we're equally indifferent to everyone. We're not interested in anybody. So that is the near enemy of equanimity, is this indifference. So if we find that our equanimity is really just sliding into this sort of equal apathy, equal indifference towards everyone, then to overcome that, we can reflect on compassion. Because by reflecting on compassion, we really feel very much connected. We empathize with our own and others' suffering. So that will really help us to overcome this indifferent attitude towards others. We can really feel then connected to everyone. But compassion sometimes can, and we saw this yesterday, I think, that this compassion can also slide into what's called despair, this hopelessness. So if we find that our compassion is just sliding into this sort of despair and hopelessness feeling, then we need to focus on the positive opposite, the empathetic joy. To really focus on the positive virtues of ourselves and others, to have that balanced view, so we're not just sliding into this desperate state. But also this empathetic joy, this rejoicing in our own and others' virtues and so forth, can slide into a sort of a meaningless rejoicing, a frivolous sort of rejoicing. Rejoicing in things that are not meaningful or even sometimes harmful. You know, sometimes we rejoice when other people are suffering, for example. So to avoid that empathetic joy sliding into this frivolous, meaningless, or even sometimes negative rejoicing, then, of course, we can reflect on loving kindness, really the wish for ourselves and others to have happiness and its causes. So in this way, each of the four immeasurables can help the other to overcome these near enemies. So that's something we can keep in mind if we find any of these four immeasurables sort of sliding into their near enemy. We can use another immeasurable to overcome that. So they really help to support each other. And then one more topic I'd like to cover now before we go for an afternoon tea break, and that's going back to this empathetic joy a little bit here, is that I said that in our modern society, in particular in our modern society, it's very important to really reflect on this empathetic joy, because we have so much a focus on the negative. It's important to keep a balanced view of ourselves and others. And also, this empathetic joy, not only is it a very good antidote to jealousy, because usually when we see others who have something, we get jealous of them, but also it's a good way to, in Buddhism, what's called accumulating merit. Merit is just virtue, doing good things. So, of course, in general, we're trying to do as much good as we can in our life. But simply rejoicing in others' virtues is a way of accumulating that virtue. So at least if we do that mentally, we can do that. So often then, within the Buddhist spiritual path, as a support for practice in general, it talks about these two aspects of increasing the positive states of mind, this merit, doing good things as much as possible to increase the virtue, and also to decrease the negative states of mind. So they talk about purifying the mind of negative thoughts, negative habits, negative behavior, and then increasing the positive. So this is something I think that we can do throughout the day, of course, but this is something that is very helpful to do at the end of each day. As part of our practice, at the end of the day, we can do a day review. We can review our day and have a look at how did our day go today. And what we can do to help overcome any negative behavior or negative habits, there are four things we can do, which I call the four opponent powers. So if we want to really work at reducing our negative habits and purifying our mind of our negative tendencies, then these are four things we can do any time we notice we've engaged in some sort of harmful behavior. And the first thing we can do, of course, is what's called regret. And that is to have sincere regret for having done that negative behaviour. So as we saw yesterday, I think, here we need to distinguish between regret and guilt. So remember, we saw yesterday that if we've done something harmful and we feel guilty, this is a sure sign that we're caught up in cognitive fusion, that we're identifying ourselves with that negative behaviour, and we're simply focusing on bad me, bad me, bad me. So guilt, of course, is based on an invalid perspective, this idea of cognitive fusion. It's completely useless. It doesn't really help. It just paralyzes us and makes us feel bad. So we don't need to feel guilty about anything. Whereas if we've done something harmful and we regret, then, of course, we're regretting the negative behavior. So that's based on the correct perspective, simply acknowledging, I have done this harmful behaviour. So by having sincere regret for that behaviour, that already weakens that imprint from that behaviour and our negative tendency to engage in that behaviour. Then following regret, we can have what's called reliance. Or sometimes translated as foundation. And reliance or foundation is simply what it means there is that we all have a particular positive direction that we're trying to follow our life in. So we all have a certain foundation that we are basing our life on. And if we've done something harmful or negative, we've really fallen down from that foundation, our positive direction in life. So this second power is about, having noticed we've done something harmful, is to really pick ourselves back up and reaffirm the positive direction that we want to follow our life in. And so that also will have an effect of purifying our mind of that negative behaviour, negative tendency. And the third of the four opponent powers is remedy. And that is to think of some sort of practical remedy for that negative behaviour. And here, we can be as practical as possible.
For example, if we've verbally abused someone at work, then one remedy can simply be to apologize to them. So if you can find something that is directly positive opposite to the negative behavior, that's very effective. Sometimes that's not logistically possible. If that's the case, then at least to do some positive action with a motivation of wishing to overcome that negative behavior can be very effective as well. And the fourth of the fourth opponent powers is resolve, is to make a strong determination not to engage in that negative behavior again. And so here also we can be very practical, because if it's some strong negative habit that we're doing very regularly, there's no point in saying, I'm never going to do that again. That's simply not going to happen. So therefore, if it's a strong negative habit, then set a time limit here and say, okay, for the next day, I'm not going to do that thing. If that's way too difficult, for the next hour, I'm not going to do that thing. If that's way too difficult, for the next 10 minutes, I'm not going to do that thing. So pick an amount of time that with some effort, normally you can manage. And then over time, you can extend it from one day to 2 days to a week, a month, a year, the rest of our life. In that way, we can even start to break very strong habits. So if we engage in these four opponent powers, every time we've noticed we've done something harmful, then this is a very strong, powerful way of overcoming that negative habit and those negative imprints in our mind. But at least what we can do, as I've just mentioned, is we can do this on a daily basis. That at the end of the day, just before you go to bed, is review the day. How did our day go? And if you notice that you've engaged in any harmful behaviour, we can go through these four opponent powers for each of those behaviours. Now, here, of course, if we're going to do this, we need to be very practical and don't make this too much. You know, if we try and go through every little small thing, we'll be probably spending a lot of time and it'll be too much and we'll just give up. So rather at the end of the day, to make it practical and doable, maybe we just pick the top three negative things that we did and focus on those, for example, and go through these four opponent powers. And that's a way of really dealing with that negativity from the day and resolving it and letting go of it and really working to overcome that negative habit. But as I mentioned, it's very important, particularly in our modern society, to also focus on the positive aspects and not just on the negative. Even though we're focusing on the negative here in a good way of purifying the negative, we still need to focus on the positive. So equally important then at the end of the day is to review the day in terms of the good things we did during the day. And so if we notice that we've done any good things during the day, then of course instead of regret, we would rejoice. So we would rejoice in that good behaviour. But again here, we want to avoid cognitive fusion. We don't want to be just praising ourselves, you know, but rather focusing on the action and rejoicing in the good behaviour that we did during the day. And then also what we can do is, similar to the fourth point here, is to make a strong resolve, strong determination to continue to engage in that positive behaviour the following day. And so that's going to strengthen our positive habits. And so this is very important also at the end of the day to really balance, so we have a balanced view of ourselves. So I think this can be something very helpful at the end of every day to reduce our negative tendencies, to increase our positive tendencies, and really to have that balanced view of ourselves as well. So that's all I wanted to really mention on that point. And we're going to introduce this into our evening practices as well, this little bit of a review before we do the just mindfulness of breathing in the evenings.
So that's all I wanted to really mention in this session this afternoon on the four immeasurables. Okay, I think that's it. So let's take afternoon tea break and we'll come back at 3:30.